You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Like many towns across America, suburban New Rochelle is a community committed to its high school football team. Despite their worries of severe injury, parents allow their kids to play. The ambitions of New Rochelle's high school football players are as varied as their demographics, but one thing is consistent: the sense of family they experience on and off the playing field. In Lasting Impact, One Team, One Season, What Happens When Our Sons Play Football, his new book from Liberty Street, New York Times bestselling author and former Sports Illustrated editor Kostya Kennedy provides an eye-opening expose into the 2014 season of the New Rochelle High School football team, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Hello.
Very happy to be on with you, Leonard.
Your previous books were about Pete Rose and Joe DiMaggio, professional athletes. What was it about high school football that struck you as a fit subject for your next book?
Yeah, it was a little bit different, of course. I felt that the question about what will happen with football in this country and whether young people will continue to play it was really a central question across sports. And a lot of times that question is framed in light of what we know of what NFL players are going through. And I wanted to look at it. There's 1.1 million kids who play high school, so it affects a lot of people.
Did you luck out in setting this time frame for your book?
I did luck out, so to speak. I mean, because some of the news that happened is not welcome news at all. But certainly in that fall of 2014, I think that years from now, if we look back, if there is a tipping point in football, it may well be then. It was then that the NFL first admitted that about a third of their workforce they expect to have substantial brain injury, which is a huge admission. There was a lot of cases with domestic violence, the Ray Rice incident, and Ray was a graduate of New Rochelle, and other cases that made it a very tumultuous and poignant season.
And there was a bit of controversy when the coach of this high school football team brought Ray Rice in. People concerned that he shouldn't have been brought in because he wasn't a fit role model?
Well, many people outside the community were concerned. In this game, an ordinary game between New Rochelle and another team on an average day was shown on CNN. But for that community where Ray grew up in the projects in New Rochelle, he had given so much back and continues to in time and in money. They embraced him in spite of what he did. They weren't going to turn away from him.
But not the school's principal. He didn't want it. The coach, Rienzo,
It's DiRienzo, yes.
He brought him in despite the principal's objections.
It's true. I think that
what was he hoping to achieve by bringing him in?
It's a great question. I think what he was trying to say, and this is a message he got across to his kids, is that if you are a member of the New Rochelle football team, we're family, we're with you forever, for better or for worse. We bring Ray back when he's the MVP of the Super Bowl, and we bring him back after this. He was careful not to in any way condone the action or anything like that, and he actually, the coach had been quite involved in getting Ray to his counseling and doing some of the things he'd been doing and trying to do, but he just wasn't about to. It had been too long.
Ray Rice had been caught on video beating up his girlfriend in an elevator, was it?
Yeah, it was in an elevator in Atlantic City, a horrible video to see or even think about.
What made you choose New Rochelle's as the football squad that you wanted to follow? Because usually when we talk about this sort of thing, it's more likely to take place in West Texas,
right,
as we saw
exactly
in Friday Night Lights.
I was thinking that we've seen that story a little bit. So the program at New Rochelle is a public high school in New York. They've sent
a suburb of New York City.
Suburb of New York City, right. And they've sent maybe, I don't know, three players to the NFL. It's not a football factory. It's a strong program, but the whole town doesn't come out. It's just a program within itself, and I think that that experience is much more akin to what most high school kids have than what goes on in Texas.
Well, three kids to the NFL, that's a pretty impressive record.
I mean, we're talking about over 50 years. There's probably, and in Coach Lou DiRienzo's, another way to look at it, time at New Rochelle, which is about 25 years, they've had eight kids go to a Division I program. I mean, more than that go out of a single county in Florida, hundreds go. So
But do all the kids on this team assume that they're going to wind up playing football in college?
I don't know about all, but a lot of them more than actually do. But one thing I want to just say quickly is that for some of these kids, we're not talking about making it to Michigan or Ohio State. If they can get a way in or a scholarship to Western Connecticut, it can be life-altering. It can be a huge, huge benefit.
Is that part of the appeal, or is it the sport itself? Because basketball is a lot less dangerous.
Yeah, there's no question that for parents and for some kids, the possibility of getting into a college with financial assistance or not, but having football help you get there, is definitely part of the equation. I think, by and large, the kids want to play. That's the first thing. But that's always, for a good percentage of the kids, the idea of, hey, I'm going to take this with me to college is a big part of it.
What's the rationale behind taking the team further upstate for a preseason training camp?
So they spend 4 days up there, and it's really to bond. It's really to sort of get them away from their element. It's a nice thing for some of these kids. New Rochelle, which is a suburb of New York City, as you've said, it's also quite an urban suburb, and they go up to a very rural area, and they play football for 4 days. They, in the cliche, they live it, eat it, breathe it, sleep it, and it bonds the team for the season ahead.
What is the demographic makeup of this team?
It's a mix, really a strong mix, primarily African-American and Caucasian. There is some Latino and some Asian, but that's primarily the team. And there's also a huge socioeconomic diversity. New Rochelle has very wealthy homes and also has project housing, so very diverse. 3,500 kids go to the high school, so it gives you a sense of the diversity there.
What was Coach DiRienzo's background? How did he get into coaching football?
So he grew up Italian-American, and his father had a stone quarry, so a blue-collar background. And he played football in high school. He played a very small school in Pennsylvania. He's not a large man. And he played, and I think that his growing up, partly through the physical work that he did working in the quarry for his father, and partly through having to work very hard just to make a team, influenced him very much in going into this line of work.
My guest is Kostya Kennedy. His latest book is Lasting Impact, One Team, One Season, What Happens When Our Sons Play Football. You also examine the topic of bullying, unfortunately a common problem in high school. But in the case of sports, is hazing more common?
Yeah, and it's some way it's a semantic thing. Hazing is a part of bullying. It's obviously not all bullying is hazing, but maybe all hazing is a form of bullying. And that can be a traumatic thing on a football team, on any team. But by and large, I found that they tended to stick together. It was sort of, you felt, particularly in a big school where there are 3,500 kids, you felt it was good to be part of the football team, and it helped you in some of the other bullying that goes on far away from the athletic fields.
Well, it also makes these kids stars.
Yep.
In the school. How does Coach DiRienzo handle his team's taunting of their rivals from Scarsdale?
Well, that's a great thing. It's a very interesting thing. Scarsdale is a much different community, much more affluent community than New Rochelle, and there was certainly a lot of racial tension in the game when I was following them, and generally. I think that he discourages it. But there's a sort of wink and understanding of, I understand where you guys are coming from in your life and where they are. And it only adds in some ways to the tension and the dichotomy between the two communities.
How good is the New Rochelle team?
By their lights, they're a very big fish in their pond. Now, remember, this is suburban New York football is nothing like Florida or Texas or Oklahoma or some of the other states. But they go to they compete for the state title pretty much every year. They went to the state semifinals last year. They won it in 2012. So they're a very good and respected local program.
What can you tell us about the team's star running back, senior Jonathan Forrest? How old was he when he started playing tackle football?
He was 6 years old, and that's true of many kids.
Isn't that scary that many people are concerned that Pop Warner football, I imagine that's what he was doing, is where the kid gets his first concussion.
There's no question that is, over the whole, that's a real concern. In New Rochelle, their program, the Mighty Mites program, it's part of why the high school is so good. The kids play it. It's a rite of passion. at six, sometimes at seven, is usually when they start playing tackle football. And it certainly is dangerous. I mean, many kids go through and are okay, but kids do get injured. And you're right, in the case of this star back, he's been playing since he was six.
Were they aware of problems elsewhere? For example, in September of that year, Miles Kirkland Thomas, a boy who played football in a high school team in Staten Island, died during practice.
Yes, they were certainly aware of that. And then later in the year, there was another death out on Long Island at Shoreham Wading River, a kid named Tom Cuttinella, who died on the field. And both of those deaths certainly were talked about, discussed, reacted to at New Rochelle, and I'm sure at other area schools.
Does it affect the way the coaches approach training?
I don't think it does. I think that there, in general, the general issue of concussion awareness does, but I don't know that these traumatic events change anything or shaped anything.
Do we know how many high school football players have died in the past year or past few years as a result of playing?
It's pretty much, and pretty consistently, it's about 12 to 13 kids a year. Some of those may be heat-related issues. They may be because of a pre-existing heart condition. And in some cases, it's simply a bad hit, an accident on the field.
Is this something that's talked about on the teams and with families?
It certainly is. I mean, I think that people feel that the odds are, of course, that it's not going to happen. But it's, again, it's something that the kids are aware of. I think that, and a couple of players told me this specifically, you never want to admit to feeling any fear, particularly among your peers. But you're aware of it. I mean, these kids, they watch a lot of football. They read about football. They know what's going on.
And they also don't want to admit when they're hurt.
That's absolutely true. And self-reporting of concussions is probably the biggest hurdle. You can't tell, particularly in football, which really is what distinguishes it from any other sport. A guy can get a concussion, and you'll have no way of knowing by looking at him. And if he doesn't say anything, it can be very hard to diagnose.
Why are head injuries more prevalent in high school football than they are in college ball?
Well, I think that they just, it's probably actually similar. I just meant it's different in football than any other sports. You hear about it in hockey, of course, and lacrosse, but football is really a unique thing, and that's partly because you're not necessarily suffering an open hit when you suffer your concussion.
What is the impact test?
So that's a test. It's basically a cognitive function test. So you take it at the beginning of a year, and other athletes besides football players take it, and you're measured for general spatial cognitive ability. And then after you've had a head injury at some point, you take that test again, and you're measured your results against your own baseline. So it's not competitive against somebody else, it's just against yourself. And if you are failing, that can signify a head injury or a concussion, and then you won't be allowed to play.
Should I be surprised that the team's quarterback, Greg Powell's father is an ER doctor and his mother is a nurse?
Well, and so, yes, I think you should be a little surprised, or I was. And his father, Gary, was one of the most attentive parents there at every game, filming a lot. Yeah, he's seen a lot of injuries. But, you know, there is a belief, and part of it is arrogance, and part of it is real, that by managing certain factors, the amount of exposure, the proper training, you can decrease your tendency for injury.
But mightn't it be a good idea to develop a high school version of the game that would lead to fewer injuries, flag or a touch football, eliminating tackling?
I think it's certainly a valuable thing to think about, and certainly something. It would change the game completely and fundamentally.
They could start tackling in college if they get that far.
Absolutely. You know, most of the medical experts say what we touched upon earlier, that at the early ages, really before 13, tends to be the ages that are talked about because of brain development and other things, to really abolish tackle. There are some people, of course, who'd like to abolish it across the board, but high school seems to be a safer zone than the younger kids.
I must admit, I feel guilty sometimes when I'm watching a football game and somebody gets injured, and I think, I'm rooting for a team, and at the same time, I'm watching something that is so violent.
Yeah, I think it has changed a little bit. If we've watched football over the years, they don't quite show as many of the big hits. They don't have the glorification of the highlight reel of big hits anymore. That's come down. But again, it's completely part of the game, and you see it every Saturday or Sunday that you're watching.
Oh, listener, Bob from Yonkers said that even though football is dangerous, doesn't it keep the kids off the streets? Is that a little cynical?
No, I think there's actually some truth to that. And I also, an important point about football as opposed to other sports is the physical nature can really be very bonding. There's a lot of grunt work. It's tedious. It's hard to be in practice. And in football, you practice much more than you play, unlike most other sports. And that physical bond, the idea that if I mess up, you're going to get hit, really builds something between a couple of young men.
So an important factor is that there are a lot of players on the field at the same time instead of just a few,
right,
as in other sports?
Exactly. And a lot of those players, and you can think about the players that we know the names of in the NFL. We all know the quarterback, and maybe you know a running back and wide receiver. But most of the players who are doing some of the most violent and physical work are anonymous. It's a very humbling game and very, very collaborative. And that's a big, big part of why it can be a powerful, good influence in young men's lives.
It's also the reason why a good offensive lineman is more likely to be drafted in the early rounds.
You're exactly right. And at the high school level is also still an age when you don't necessarily have to be hugely oversized. If you're of average strength and have the right technique, you can play offensive line.
Kostya Kennedy's latest book is Lasting Impact, One Team, One Season, What Happens When Our Sons Play Football. Thank you so much for being on our show.
My pleasure. I enjoyed being with you.
The book is published, by the way, by Liberty Street.